Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, December 20th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Records request reveals emails in 2 days after University of Idaho announced plans to purchase University of Phoenix for $685 million. And the time the State Board of Education approved the deal 2 days later in May. Citizen speaks to Moscow City Council about the climate emergency. Montana commission to do feasibility study of passenger rail service across the southern part of Montana. And scientists show glyphosate intake among people who live near Idaho farms. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And you're tuned to KRFP Moscow Pullman and live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho. I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho Education News has reported on the hundreds of emails sent to the State Board of Education and other education officials during the 2 days in May between the time the University of Idaho put its plan to purchase the online University of Phoenix on the agenda and the time the State Board of Education approved the financing plan for the purchase. That occurred on May 18th. An email from UI sociology professor Leontina Hormel said the deal was a violation of trust and a blow to campus morale. A citizen named Scott Fehrenbacher, who said he had administrative experience at a for-profit university, spoke about the aggressive recruiting practices and poor academic performance of the University of Phoenix. Attorney Galen Schuler, who is the son of a college president, said leaders were rushing into the deal and were treating Idahoans like bumpkins who would not understand. The UI and the State Board of Education were rushing to meet a May 19th deadline from the University of Phoenix's accrediting agency. When the State Board of Education met May 18th, they discussed the planned purchase for an hour and a half and did not take public comment. The Idaho Education News reports Ed Board staffers forwarded the massive amount of emails from the public to individual board members 5 hours before the board meeting started. At the meeting, Ed Board President Kurt Liebeck said the board had heard opposition from people who said the 85,000-student online University of Phoenix had a poor academic record and that the public and faculty had been left out of the process. Since then, Idaho Attorney General Raul Labrador has pushed back, suing the State Board of Education for alleged open meeting law violations at closed-door meetings in March through May, leading up to the open State Board of Education meeting where the vote took place. The Ed Board says they were meeting under an exemption to the open meeting law allowed when there are competing bidders. There's some question whether the University of Arkansas was competing with the University of Idaho for the purchase of the University of Phoenix at the time. The University of Arkansas Board of Regents eventually decided not to move forward with purchasing the University of Phoenix earlier this year. In May, University of Idaho lobbyist Carolyn Nilsen Troy, who is a former state House member representing Latah County, said lawmakers were pressing her for details about the planned nonprofit board that would oversee the University of Phoenix once the UI purchased it and the UI's business plan, noting UI President C. Scott Green had a non-traditional background as a business executive. Troy summed up one communication from a lawmaker which said only Scott Green could pull this off. She wrote of one lawmaker who said, although the Idaho legislature has no involvement, it doesn't mean it won't get involved. On the eve of the state board meeting, University of Idaho graduate Christopher Birkenbein wrote to President Green that his UI education allowed him to obtain a position as project manager at NASA. Birkenbein wrote, I have been proud to display my Joe Vandal stickers and coffee cups and discuss the merits of an Idaho State school education in science. I have spoken to numerous industry partners who won't even consider graduates of the University of Phoenix unless they have real-world experience in industry first. This is not a reputation the University of Idaho should want to take on. Green replied to the email saying, "There are many benefits of this affiliation for the university and the state. World-class systems and the ability to reach our place-bound rural students are just a couple of examples. We hope you will soon hear stories of their success." A Moscow citizen has been regularly going to city council meetings to speak about the climate emergency during the public comment period at the beginning of each meeting. Nick was at the Monday, December 4th meeting and the meeting this past Monday night. Here he is addressing the Moscow City Council on December 4th.
My name is Nick. I live over at the Elysians, 305 Palouse Court, a proud renter of Moscow, I always say. I'm going to put back on my climate activist hat. The last time I spoke to you all was pre-pipeline bust, and we haven't had a meeting since. And we need to call out what we were saying a month ago before the pipeline bust was declare the crisis. We are in an emergency of an ecological and climate catastrophe that we're currently living through, and you all hold the power to declare it. This is something that the Biden administration is going to be pressured to declare soon by many organizations, being launched tomorrow by the Sunrise Movement in particular. But this is something that we talked about at the rally that we had the Friday of the week of the pipeline burst. We had it planned for weeks prior, but then the pipeline burst, and then it was pretty apt to have a climate rally, and we sought public kind of comments on our current draft of a climate and ecological declaration for the city of Moscow. And we have one that's currently in the drafting stages. We're not just kind of just, it sometimes feels like we're just shaking our fist. But seeing all the hundreds and hundreds of other cities throughout the U.S. also declare similar and like emergencies is really reaffirming in this effort. And I made a map, I'd be happy to show you all, of the cities and municipalities and indigenous groups that have declared similar crises, and it'd be the first in Idaho and probably the first within our broader region east of the Cascade Mountains, which is, I think, really saying something. This is something I really hope that you all put towards the forefront of your kind of imaginings. I was able to go to the Climate Action Planning Working Group, and I'm really amazed by their work that they do in that organization, but I think that you all could really push along a more liberating agenda to make sure that we put climate at the forefront of our happenings within the city.
I'd love a map.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I emailed you three of the commissioners about the draft, and I'd be happy to send along the map as well.
Please do.
Awesome. Of course, it's limited by the current database that I'm working with. However, because Montana isn't highlighted, which is surprising because of the given lawsuit that happened that the youth filed, and it was successful. So I'm going to be looking more into Montana specifically, but Idaho is something that I could not find anywhere.
Another approach would be to take it through the Sustainable Environment Commission as well and vet it through them.
Yeah, there's something that the commission that I've been putting kind of the center of this is any development issues that you all have had presented to you in the past times that I've been able to make it to committee, they don't mention carbon and development, which is a massive problem. We're talking about concrete, which is one of the biggest emitters of CO2 within our city. So I think it needs to be at the forefront of development, and the Commission on Sustainable Environment would be a great forefront to kind of integrate. As well as the creation of one of the bylines we have in the resolution is to have a climate action workforce that is a subgroup of their commission to kind of push these agendas.
That was Nick speaking to the Moscow City Council on December 4th. You also heard from Mayor Art Bedke and City Council Member Sandra Kelly during that clip. Nick reminded the council about the climate crisis at this past Monday night's meeting.
My name's Nick. I'm a proud renter. I'll say it every time. I live over in the Elysian Apartments. I want to say it again. I think it'll become a bi-monthly thing. We're officially in the warmest year in the past 125,000 years. That's kind of confirmed by EU's Copernicus Lab, or the Earth observation that they do over in the EU. But just really got to push that this needs to stay at the forefront of conversation. And it's not just about climate change. Climate change is definitely not everything. We're also looking at how that's going to harm humans, more than humans, as well as the landscapes writ large. Something I was doing some calculations with that I shared to Kelly, but I wanted to kind of check it to everyone here is that around like 1 pound of food waste is the CO2 equivalent of driving to Pullman and back. So if we think about like on average, the U.S. wastes like 350 pounds per person. But if we like lower that because...
Or a day.
A year. Okay. A year, pardon.
Just making sure.
Yeah, totally. So if we think of like Moscow residents maybe being a bit better and we only waste like 300 pounds a year, that's like 7.5 million trips back and forth between Pullman a year. So thinking about that's like an actionable thing that we can do is decreasing food waste, not just to compost, but also to how to feed that to humans or animals or livestock. That's an actionable thing that I know Kelly's talked about, but thinking about how the commission can activate some funds or look for funds out there. I just wanted to mention that kind of fun little stat that you can share to your friends and family. It's based in the EU. Maybe not fun, especially as we enter kind of the like holiday seasons, right? There's a lot of food waste that's generated from that. So thinking of ways that we can reduce that going to the landfill. And it doesn't have to just go to humans, but it can also go to our kin or our landfill or our compost, pardon. I just wanted to share that as warmest year in the past 125,000 years. It's a big issue, really big issue.
That was Moscow citizen Nick speaking to the Moscow City Council on Monday night. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report.
High turnover rates are plaguing local elections offices across the West, which is causing concern as the 2024 election approaches. A recent study found about 40% of chief election officials in Western states have left office since November 2020. Idaho and Washington saw the lowest turnover, each at 23%. However, Michael Beckel with Issue One, the organization that conducted the research, says the Idaho officials who left oversaw a large portion of the state's population.
In Idaho, about 40% of the state's population will see the election administered by somebody different than who administered the last presidential election.
In Issue One study, Arizona saw the highest turnover in election officials by far, at 80% since November 2020. Beckel notes elections are complex and technical to administer, requiring experience to do so effectively. According to his organization's research, officials who left office in the past 3 years took 1,800 years of combined experience with them. Beckel says that knowledge would have been valuable during the high-pressure election season.
There's a real risk that if there are innocuous mistakes, innocent errors that get made in this political environment, those types of minor administrative mistakes could get blown out of proportion, turned into new conspiracy theories that cause people to lose faith in the elections process.
Beckel says election officials need more resources, and his organization has pushed Congress to invest in critical elections infrastructure. He also says politicians have a role in ensuring elections run smoothly.
It would be really incumbent on a lot of our political leaders to take that temperature down, to ratchet down the rhetoric, and remind people about all of the checks and balances that are in place, all of the transparency measures that are in place.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Love's Kombucha is proud to support KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Love's Kombucha is a fun, lively, fermented probiotic tea that is craft brewed right here in Moscow. For more information, visit loveskombucha.com.
A team of scientists has published a study to measure exposure to glyphosate near farms in Idaho, which found those who live within a third of a mile from an active agricultural field had higher concentrations of glyphosate in their urine during the glyphosate spraying season. Glyphosate, made by Monsanto, is the most used pesticide in the world. It's been around for 50 years, sold under the brand name Roundup, but growers have increased the use of the chemical in the past two decades as genetically modified crops appeared on the market that are tolerant to high-level glyphosate applications. The Idaho Press reports the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer says glyphosate is a likely carcinogen in humans. The researchers coordinated with health district staff to find pregnant people to participate in the study from agricultural areas near Nampa, Caldwell, Meridian, Garden City, Twin Falls, Jerome, Gooding, Shoshone, and Hayburn. The study also found people had higher concentrations of glyphosate in their blood during spraying season than people who live farther away from active agriculture fields. The scientists published their findings in the journal Environmental Health Perspectives. Boise State University School of Public and Population Health Associate Professor Cynthia Curl, who worked on organizing the study, told the Idaho Press, non-Hodgkin lymphoma, which is a cancer of the lymph system, is the type of cancer researchers most associate with glyphosate exposure. Four studies have found glyphosate exposure is associated with preterm birth and reduced fetal growth, among other pregnancy-related conditions. Curl said, other studies of other types of pesticides have recommended closing windows if you know that a field next to you is spraying, or asking your neighbor farmer to notify you when they're spraying so you can close the window. If it's in the house dust, deep cleaning can be recommended. But until we know the exact mechanism, we can't really make those recommendations for glyphosate. I feel like we're still catching up with this chemical in terms of treating it like the most commonly used agricultural chemical that it is. The precautionary principle suggests that we try to lower exposures to chemicals until we know they are safe, rather than the other way around. Curl said one avenue of glyphosate exposure is from residue on food, but scientists who study glyphosate do not think it becomes airborne like other pesticides do. Bayer, the company which purchased Monsanto in 2018, wrote in an email to the Idaho Press, glyphosate exposure levels in the study are way lower than those that would indicate any health concerns. The email says the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has strict rules in place to ensure pesticide exposures do not pose health risks. The EPA sets daily exposure limits at least 100 times below levels shown to have no negative effect in safety studies, and the highest exposure level reported in this study is only 0.001% of the EPA's safe daily exposure level. The Environmental Protection Agency has not recognized the World Health Organization's designation of glyphosate as a likely carcinogen. The Nampa School Board voted Monday to stop using four elementary school buildings amid declining enrollment. Nampa is the fourth largest school district in the state in terms of number of students, but its enrollment has declined from 14,900 students to less than 13,000 students in the last decade. Although Nampa is rapidly growing in population, most of that growth is on the edge of the city, areas which are in other school districts. Also, many of the new residents moving to Nampa are retired and do not have children that are attending school. The Idaho Education News reported Nampa School Board member Mandy Simpson said ahead of the vote, part of the problem is the legislature's lack of funding for schools, and that Idaho is one of only two states that require a two-thirds supermajority of voters to pass a bond. Voters did not have the 67% needed to pass a $210 million bond that went before Nampa School District voters in March. School officials also noted the federal government has ended pandemic-related funding. Three of the school buildings the district plans to stop using will be repurposed for other educational programs. The Snake River Elementary Building will house the district's Gateways program. The Greenhurst Elementary School will be used for the district's preschool program and the Nampa Online Virtual Academy. The West Middle Elementary School will be home to the Union School program and the Nampa Academy. Centennial Elementary School will be closed completely. The school board voted to keep Central Elementary School open. District officials had considered closing that school as well. Nampa Superintendent Greg Russell estimated previously the changes will cause the district to lay off 26 staff members. The Federal Railroad Administration this month awarded a $500,000 grant to the Big Sky Passenger Rail Authority to explore the feasibility of returning passenger rail service to the North Coast Hiawatha route, which had served Montana's largest cities on a Chicago to Seattle route until 1979. That train served Billings, Bozeman, and Missoula. Current passenger rail service in Montana is limited to Amtrak's Empire Builder, which travels once per day in each direction on the Chicago to Seattle route along the High Line, serving northern Montana stops such as Havre, Glacier National Park, and Whitefish. Missoula County Commissioner Dave Strohmeyer told the Montana Free Press in an interview the 2021 Federal Infrastructure Act directed the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Federal Railroad Administration to study bringing back former Amtrak routes and explore opening new routes around the country. The final report is expected next spring or summer. Strohmeyer said the rail lines for the North Coast Hiawatha route in southern Montana already exist and are used for freight. But in order to reestablish passenger service, crews would have to install double tracks in some places, install or restore stations, and install additional signals. Strohmeyer told the Montana Free Press it would not be a zero-sum game where the High Line would lose passenger service. He said officials in Montana commissioned a high-level socioeconomic analysis a few years ago that estimated restoring the North Coast Hiawatha route would attract 426,000 riders per year and contribute $271 million to the economics of communities along the route.
We all live downriver from Hanford. That's the message painted on the windows of the Patagonia store in Seattle's Belltown neighborhood. It's a reminder of the continuing danger created by the remaining toxic nuclear waste at the Hanford site in Benton County. Advocates with the nonprofit Hanford Challenge painted the mural to remind people that everyone will suffer if the waste seeps into the groundwater and into the Columbia River. Nicholas Peterson is executive director of Hanford Challenge, a nonprofit group that tracks the cleanup efforts.
We are holding the federal government, the contractors doing this work, accountable to make sure that they don't walk away from this cleanup and leave a mess that future generations will have to deal with.
During World War II, U.S. government nuclear scientists at Hanford created the plutonium used in the atomic bomb, contaminating the soil and leaving behind 56 million gallons of high-level toxic waste. The current plan is to transform much of the waste into a glass-like material, put it in steel tanks, and bury it underground. The Yakima Nation's Environmental Restoration Waste Management Program has teamed up with the nonprofit Columbia Riverkeeper to teach future generations about the ongoing cleanup and offer field trips to the site. Peterson says his organization is working to get Hanford into the standard curriculum in all Washington State high schools.
We want people in especially the Pacific Northwest to really take ownership of Hanford, and we can demand a better and safer cleanup for all of us.
The Federal Department of Energy maintains a page dedicated to the Hanford site cleanup. People interested in volunteering can contact Hanford Challenge and Columbia Riverkeeper. For Washington News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The American Federation of Teachers is partnering with organizations around the country to promote community solutions to the issues education is facing. AFT's Powerful Partnerships Institute has provided $1 million in grants to 38 state and local affiliates, including AFT Washington. In Washington, they partnered with the Alliance for a Just Society to increase opportunities for students of color in community and technical colleges. Fernando Mejia-Ledesma is with the AJS-founded Community for Our Colleges Coalition.
So students of color, immigrants, and really all the students that have been historically disenfranchised, they can not only navigate the system, but also finish on time. And then when they finish, they can either transfer to a four-year college or get a good job that has really good wages and working conditions.
As part of this initiative, AFT Washington and its partners are working to help more undocumented students get access to financial aid, improve pay equity for community and technical college faculty, and increase access to affordable housing and child care. President of AFT Washington Karen Strickland says the people most affected by these issues are leading the charge.
It's the workforce and it's the students who know where the biggest obstacles are, where the challenges are, where the needs are. And so that is what drives the coalition.
AFT Washington and the Community for Our Colleges Coalition wants the state to make community college accessible for everyone by making it tuition-free. Mahia Ledesma says Washington already is moving in the right direction.
The direction that we're taking right now is one of justice, one of equity, and we're going to continue pushing on that. We hope that we can continue being an example for the rest of the country.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Idaho Statesman and ProPublica teamed up on a study of school building conditions in Idaho. The Idaho Statesman reports the state has not done a full assessment of its school buildings in 30 years. The last full review was in 1993. The Idaho Statesman and ProPublica reported superintendents, teachers, and students see leaks and have to study in excessively cold or hot school buildings during the school year. The Idaho Statesman and ProPublica sent surveys to all 115 school district superintendents in the state, asking them about building conditions. 106 replied. The nine superintendents that did not reply were in the Arbon Elementary, Bliss, Council, Cul-de-Sac, Mullen, Pleasant Valley, Teton County, Troy, and White Pine school districts. Of those, every superintendent said they had at least one school building problem that causes a significant challenge or requires major repairs. 78% of the superintendents said they had five major building problems or more, and 20% said they had 10 or more. 85% said they had problems with heating. 67% said they had problems with cooling. The percentage of superintendents who said their districts had other major problems was 61% for roofs, 58% for accessibility, 58% for bathrooms, 55% for windows, 50% for leaks, 41% for structural issues, 38% for traffic safety in parking lot drop-off areas or nearby streets, 35% for electrical, 31% for asbestos, 28% for overcrowding, 26% for fire and emergency preparedness, 16% for outdated equipment, 10% for inadequate Wi-Fi, 10% for drinking water, and 9% other. 20% of the superintendents said they might be able to address the issues in the next year. Only 4% were sure that they would. 35% of the superintendents said at least one quarter of the school buildings in their districts were in poor condition. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow Pullman area. It will be mostly cloudy tonight with a low of 34, cloudy through mid-morning. Tomorrow, then clearing, high 44, partly cloudy Thursday night, low 32. 60% chance of rain on Friday, mainly after 4 p.m. Snow level 6,000 feet, lowering to 4,400 feet in the afternoon. Partly sunny, high 42. On Friday night, 70% chance of precipitation, rain and snow likely before 10 p.m. Then a chance of snow, mostly cloudy, low 27. West winds 15, gusts up to 25. New snow accumulation less than half an inch possible. Mostly sunny Saturday, high 35. And mostly clear Saturday night, low 22. Partly sunny on Sunday, high 33. Mostly cloudy Sunday night, low 24. And Monday, Christmas Day, 20% chance of snow after 10 a.m. Partly sunny, high 35. Currently 35 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There, you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Be sure to look in your mail pile to see if you've gotten a fundraising letter, end of the year fundraising letter from KRFP. It's also posted on the KRFP.org website. Also on the website, you can stream KRFP and listen to archived editions of all the KRFP shows in the last 2 weeks, KRFP.org. I'm Lee Robartas. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Flashpoints is coming up next.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by Moscow Ale.